Holy Gospel according to John, the 20th chapter. When it was evening on that day, the first day of the week, and the doors of the house where the disciples had met were locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you." When he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained." But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand. Put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. This is the gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. In 2007, there was a reality show on MTV that lasted just 2 seasons. I knew about this because I had just gone through a divorce, and my 12-year-old son would come over and wanted to watch this with me late at night. Anyone who knows how hard it is to get a child that age to do anything with you knows that I would stay up late and watch this show with him. It was called Scarred. The show lasted 2 seasons, and in it, the producers tracked down kids who had posted videos of themselves doing extreme sports, rollerblading, skateboarding, skiing, snowboarding. They were doing extreme sports, and they had a scar to prove it. Scarred. Each episode began with a young youth standing up on the screen saying something like this: "My name is Eli, I'm from Brunswick, New Jersey, and this is my scar story." And then it would go and we would immediately see Eli and his buddies practicing skateboarding, for example, showing the places they like to ride their skateboards, talking about where the skateboard came from, until finally they showed that one day, when Eli was doing something smart like riding his skateboard down a rail of a whole bunch of steps, he missed the jump at the end. And then we would see blood, bone, squad, lights, a hospital, a gurney moving fast, hands, x-rays, bolts, things that hold your legs together when you break them, and ultimately his scar on the other side. They had 5 such features per show. I told you I watched these with my young son because this was a bonding experience. But you can imagine, we could have been watching The Chainsaw Murderer and I would have been less scared watching these shows. It was terrifying to me. And he would punctuate our watching by saying, That's rad. That's great. Look at him go.
Bleed.
Right? Oh. 1 year later, 2008, I took a group of youth, including this same son, to New Orleans for the Jesus, Justice, and Jazz Youth Gathering. Some of you might remember it. On that first morning that we were there, we were assigned. Anyone who's ever been to a youth gathering or heard about it, it's very organized. You have colors and you follow the schedule and they blow whistles. So I was assigned to a big room at 7:30 in the morning with 500 kids and too many donuts and not enough napkins and no volume control after riding 23 hours in a bus. There I was, and at 8:05 they announced we were gonna do an icebreaker, me not yet finished with my first cup of coffee. An icebreaker, they said, it would be fun. It was horrible. It was like speed dating. They wanted us to, every time the bell rings, you're gonna stand in front of someone and you're gonna tell them something about yourself, and here's a list of stuff you gotta tell. You gotta talk really fast, and then when the bell rings 30 seconds later, you gotta find someone else, and the person that wins the prize is the one that gets through the most information from other people. I'm a bit of an introvert. This was not my thing. But I'm also a strategist, so I had a strategy. I was gonna find the quietest youth in the farthest corner of the room, and I was gonna go have my first speed date with that room and then sit down on the floor behind them and hope no one noticed. And so I did. When the bell rang, I made my way to the far corner of the room where there was this awkward-looking youth. Of course, they all looked awkward, right? That's the age they were. Awkward youth with red hair, very slender, looking pretty sleepy like me. And he was in the corner facing the wall, and I thought, oh, his strategy is don't make eye contact, right? So I went around him and said, we gotta do this. Hey, I already know you. You were on Scarred. And he was.
Oh, wow.
I watched him on this Scarred show, and it was the same thing. His face lit up. He was so excited that I knew that he was famous and really didn't belong in this place, right? And I looked at his scar to get dead all the way down his arm, and he told me the whole story again, and he was the only youth I talked to during our speed dating icebreaker, but I felt so good about it and blessed that I knew this boy, and I knew his scar, and I knew what he needed to talk about, right? That was God active in my life. 1 year later, 2009, my youngest son, who had introduced me to Scarred, limped off the football field where he had been the quarterback after being under a pile of pretty much every other player on the other team with a broken ankle. The surgery was relatively easy. He came home with medication, but once he got home, no matter how much we attended to his recovery with ice and raising the leg and medication, the pain kept doubling every hour. Now, this is a young man who has a high tolerance of pain. We ended up taking him back to the emergency, and for 3 days they had a pain team brought in to try to help with his pain, but they could not figure out what the problem was. Finally, his leg was showing signs of, I don't really know the name of it, but they were talking about removing his leg. They were talking about removing his leg, and they said, we've got 72 hours, and at 73, we have no choice. We have to do this. It was one of the most anxiety-producing experiences I've ever been through. I mean, I know that there's a lot worse things that happen to people, but this was my baby, right? So it turned out at the 11th hour, or actually the 72nd hour of this whole ordeal, that the main surgeon was going home when he turned his car around. It was like a House episode, and said, I got it. He had something called compartment syndrome. Anybody familiar with that? So it's when your fascia wraps itself tight like a shrink wrap on your muscle and continues to pull tighter and tighter. He ended up having 4 surgeries in 10 days, 6 weeks of physical therapy, and to this day has 150 stitches on a scar that goes up in the back of his leg, and they saved that leg. Medicine, right? It may leave us scarred, but oh, the good that it does, oh, the lives that it can extend. When he was 18 years old, he had Fear No Evil tattooed in the middle of his calf, on the back, right over that scar, which he took from the 23rd Psalm. That's right, Fear No Evil. Of course, it took me another 10 years to stop asking to see his scar. I always wanted to make sure, is it still together? Do we need to go back to the hospital? His patience wore thin with me on that. Scars are evidence that prove a story. They mark a trauma. They remind us this really happened. I really went through this. You really went through this. Many of our scars mark our bodies, and frankly, if you ever want to get a whole bunch of youth talking, start a scar story circle, right? They just can't resist it. Everyone remembers the scar conversation in Jaws, right? Everybody remembers that. They just can't, because there's something about a scar that takes you back to when you got it and enables you to marvel that you made it through to the other side and you are still here. To God be the glory. It marks a trauma of something that we went through. I wonder if this story we read today about Thomas, in which we always focus on his doubt, it seems, or his lack of faith, or his need for evidence, I wonder if this could also be a story about Jesus, who needed to show his scars to Thomas as much as Thomas needed to see them. Anyone who has ever gone through trauma knows you need to talk about it. You need to show the scar. You need someone else to affirm you that this happened. You went through this and you're still traumatized and that scar is still raw. And sometimes we ask about that scar 10 years later, right? I realize I'm a writer and I've been reading through my journals that I kept during 2020. And I've realized by observing people lately that we are just starting to tell our scar stories from 2020, from what happened when COVID happened. At first, it was too raw. We couldn't really talk about it except in very vague terms. We might say something like, did you see them singing in Italy, right? Did you hear about them taking bagels to the ER for all the surgeons and the nurses? Did you know, do you understand how to isolate? We might say that, but we haven't really told the scar stories of what it was like to live through a global pandemic and to lose people. Even if you didn't know anyone personally, we lost millions of people in a very short time. I turned to one of my pages in the journal recently, and the only thing I had written on this one day was, they closed Italy today. That hits different now, right? At the time, I was just trying to write down what was happening. I looked at that and I thought, that's right. They closed Italy. And then they started closing other countries. And then we worried that people couldn't get home on airplanes. Remember? It's time for us, I think, to start telling our scar stories, whether they are about what happened the last 4 years in COVID, acts of racism we have lived through. I'm engaged in anti-racism training right now that is put on through the BRIC team, our anti-racism team through the Synod. Today is my third day, and we are doing some holy storytelling about systemic racism and how deeply ingrained white supremacy is, and I am hearing some scar stories. Maybe Jesus needed to show his scar to Thomas as much as Thomas needed to see them, and maybe he was what we call modeling behavior for the rest of us to not be ashamed of our scars, to not be ashamed to talk about them and to look at them and to even touch them and remember that they mark something that very real that we went through, and thanks be to God, something very real that we lived through, right? And when I was putting all this together, I kept imagining Jesus needing to tell this story just as much as Thomas needed to hear it. And I imagined, what if Jesus had walked into that room and said, "My name is Jesus of Nazareth, and this is my scar story."